There's a place where I've been told every street is paved with gold, and it's just across the borderline.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jeff Biggers, the American Book Award-winning author of several books of history and memoir, including The United States of Appalachia in the Sierra Madre and Reckoning at Eagle Creek, which received the Sierra Club's David Brow Award for Environmental Reporting. Raised in Tucson, Arizona, his latest book just out is State Out of the Union, Arizona and the Final Showdown Over the American Dream. He writes regularly for Salon and Huffington Post, among other publications, and performs monologues based on his work at theaters and festivals. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeff Biggers.
Thanks for having me back, Ian.
And obviously, the federal judge who has been trying to navigate with the Supreme Court, Judge Susan Bolton, over the how to implement the ruling when the Supreme Court struck down most of SB 1070, the remaining part of the law, the show me your papers provision, as it's called, she had, I think, no choice but to implement it. But even the Supreme Court itself, Justice Kennedy, in his ruling, suggested that we'll just have to wait and see how it's implemented. What's your sense of how it's implemented? Because I just can't see any other way that this law could be implemented, but that it would involve profiling.
Right. Well, let's just look at the empirical evidence, Ian. You know, in December, the Department of Justice announced their investigation of Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And this is just in one county of the rest of the state. Of course, Maricopa County is infamous there in the Phoenix area. They went through thousands of documents, 400 interviews, and they found what they called the worst cases of racial profiling they'd ever seen in their experience. You know, I think it's very clear from the get-go that this is going to create a state of confusion, but also just rampant violations of civil rights. And I think for the most part, everybody was very disappointed at Judge Bolton's decision, but at the same time recognized the sort of the horse before the cart. They have to wait till the law is actually instituted. It came into effect yesterday. But I think there's going to be an avalanche of violations that will quickly be brought back to court. So I think we'll be right back in court very soon.
Well, according to the Justice Department, Jeff Biggers, Arizona's population of 2 million Latinos include an estimated 400,000 who are undocumented. So given that and I'd like to understand why the feds dropped their case against Sheriff Arpaio. So he's free to run amok, isn't he?
Well, they had two cases. What they dropped last week that you're referring to, which also was really a great disappointment, was an investigation into corruption and mismanagement and abuse of power that he had been working with the former county prosecutor who eventually was disbarred for corruption and mismanagement and once again, abuse of power. The feds, for some reason, lost their backbones and dropped that case. But the investigation in terms of racial profiling and civil rights violations, that investigation is still on.
So when you talk about corruption, Jeff Biggers, my understanding is that a possible subtext for pushing this law through was that many people in Governor Brewer's administration at the highest levels also had either direct involvement with or had connections to the private prison industry. And that this law, SB 1070, fully implemented, would be a boon for private prisons because so many people would be arrested waiting deportation.
Right. You know, there was just an incredible expose on that over a year ago showing that at one of the conventions of ALEC, of course, you know, the shadowy front of the corporate lobbies and very conservative legislators, they're in the hotel with former state Senator Russell Pierce, who was the architect behind SB 1070. We're the prison lobbyists who worked hand-in-hand and actually helped come up with some of the language of the bill itself. So it's a matter of fact. They even admit that. And I think that is beyond any kind of cautionary tale. It's something that we really all have to look across the country is, what is the difference now with this attack on immigrants? It's no longer of, let's just get rid of them and deport them, like in the 1950s with Eisenhower. It's no longer, let's create a bigger wall, like Bill Clinton wanted to do, of course, with Operation Gatekeeper. Now we're really looking at a very extreme punitive approach that we want to throw them in prison for a certain amount of time. And then, of course, I think you're really right on where you touch is, therefore, who's benefiting? And the entire prison system that deals with undocumented immigrants is completely controlled now by the private prison industry, which, once again, was hand in step with this law. So I think that's something that should raise the hair on the back of all Americans who not only believe in civil rights, but just believe in the Constitution itself.
Again, I'm speaking with award-winning author Jeff Biggers, whose latest book is State Out of the Union, Arizona and the Final Showdown Over the American Dream. So how did Arizona end up with such a constellation of noxious politicians and real sort of crypto fascists like Sheriff Arpaio, Russell Pierce, who's actually suffered a political reversal, and Jan Brewer, who's famous for wagging her finger in the face of President Obama. I remember speaking some years back to a reporter with the Arizona Republic, asked him, I said, what's with your governor? And he said, oh, don't you realize she's as dumb as a bag of hammers?
Right, that's a compliment. You know, Ian, we've been going through this cycles of anti-immigrant spasms and state rights movements for a century. And as a historian, I had to go back and sort of say, you know, is what's happening now, is it unique? Or is it just follows this continuum of what we've been dealing with? And in fact, if you look at Arizona, it came into the Union 100 years ago. It came kicking and screaming. They didn't want to be part of a state conjoined with New Mexico out of sheer racism. They said New Mexico was a bunch of Mexicans, and Arizona they wanted to keep pure Anglo-American, a complete disregard for the history, for the reality of the cultural legacies and makeup of the state. The good news, though, and I think this is something I really try to stress in my book, is that for 100 years, the deeply rooted part of Arizona, what I call the real Arizona or the other Arizona, has been fighting back. And in fact, it was people like Mexican and immigrant labor, Mexican Americans, who were working in the copper camps that galvanized Arizona as a state and really brought it in as a state in 1912 as a very progressive labor state. Once again, they were booted out and deported. Once again, it was Mexican Americans and immigrants and indigenous people who led all sorts of social and cultural movements for civil rights, you know, up until Cesar Chavez, of course, who came out of Arizona's fields and had to return in 1972 for his great Cease Puede movement, which ultimately changed how we see migrant workers. So there's been this pushback, pullback for 100 years. So while Arizona certainly has its share of Tea Party yahoos and neo-Nazis and all sorts of characters, I think it's also really important to point out that it has its incredible share of real American heroes who've been fighting back against this kind of extremism for over a century.
Well, we certainly learned about people like Gabrielle Giffords after she was shot. You know, what a great champion she is, and the former governor, who's now Secretary of Homeland Security. There are some impressive politicians, but the questions that Jan Brewer raises is if she's as dumb as a bag of hammers, who's controlling her?
Right, you know, and clearly it was Russell Pierce. And here's a good example. Russell Pierce, this fringe politician who believes there's been this invasion from Mexico, who's part of this fringy 10th Amendment crowd. Russell Pierce doesn't believe that we're citizens of the United States. We're citizens of the sovereign states of America. And therefore, he's a complete states' rightser, straight out of the 1950s of Alabama. Now, here's this fringy guy who somehow got control of the state Senate, and he became president of our state Senate, and it's he who essentially the de facto governor and rammed through SB 1070. Brewer knew nothing what was going on. But at the same time, within 6 months of Pierce being at the pinnacle of his power, this man who seemed invincible, the Tea Party president, A movement was started by a young Latino organizer. He worked with a bipartisan coalition. They went block for block in arguably the most conservative district in America, Mesa, the heartland of conservative Mormonism. And they took on Pierce, and they defeated him in a recall. And this, to me, Ian, was the most important national story overlooked by the national media. We all were watching Wisconsin, but we should have been watching Arizona, because this little group of determined people, a mix of young Latinos with, sort of graying baby boomers, came together to say, hey, this extremism doesn't represent Arizona, and they took it to the ballot box, and they actually threw out, for the first time in American history, a sitting state Senate president. And that, to me, is an incredible victory, but more importantly, it's really the opening salvo of what this election and the next elections are going to be about.
And what's your sense, Jeff Biggers, of the whole national election is in flux, it would seem, with a very close race at the presidential level and unprecedented amounts of money being poured in at the state and local level, largely from conservative billionaires through super PACs, to elect Republicans both to the state house and to the Congress. What's the lay of the land like in Arizona?
You know, it's really up for grabs now. Obviously, it's still leaning Romney, but at the same time, the Senate race is neck and neck. You know, the former U.S. Surgeon General under Bush has become a Democrat. His name is Richard Carmona. He's actually a Puerto Rican who has since moved to Arizona. I think this is what I see. The Republican Party, as we saw a couple of weeks ago at their convention, completely embraced the Arizonification of immigration. They went way outright, way out extreme. They even complimented it in Arizona on the states' rights rebellion. You know, they rammed through this immigration platform that was extreme. And Romney has basically tied into that. He's made Arizona a litmus test. And as we know, Ian, there's 15 swing states, especially in the West, that all have critical Latino voterage. And what we also know is that the Latino vote is probably going to increase at least by 8% this year. So if you're looking in those states like Colorado and New Mexico and Arizona and Las Vegas and Nevada and those areas, you know, where often the races are determined by less than 3%, if you see a mobilization of the Latino vote, which I feel like we're going to see this year, they are going to make the difference in the race. You know, every month, Ian, we have 18,000 new Latino voters being registered across the country, new 18-year-olds who are turning voting age. And I think this is part of the demographic shift that the old-timers, these old guard of the Tea Party in Arizona, want to deny. But in fact, this is the reality. This is the reality you're facing in California. This is the reality of demographic shift that's happening now in Arizona, where you have 87% of the population who are older are actually Anglos, whereas 65% of the youth are Latinos. And this is not from immigration. This is just from native births. And so the writing is on the wall, and I think that's what we have to really reflect, is that there's a new Latino power and electorate that I think is really going to come into play as a critical part in this election, and if not in this election, then in 2014 and 2016.
Again, I'm speaking with award-winning author Jeff Biggers, the author of the new book, State Out of the Union, Arizona and the Final Showdown Over the American Dream. So back to the implementation of the so-called Show Me Your Papers part of SB 1070, most of which was struck down by the Supreme Court. And as I mentioned, Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy in late June warned that the federal law could face further constitutional challenges. It's going into effect. You're suggesting that Arizona could be a bellwether for the election. So what kind of scenarios are going to play out on the streets? I mean, if you've noticed what Mitt Romney just did with the release of that tape showing his true attitudes, that 47% of Americans, I guess that includes you and me, Jeff, are victims. But he's doubling down on that. He's trying to say that, you know, I'm making a larger point, and I'm, you know, he's using his own gaffe as a wedge issue. So it's not inconceivable that the Republicans will use the immigration issue as a wedge issue. So the real question is, what kind of pictures are we going to be seeing on television? I understand a lot of young activists are now warning Latinos in Arizona not to carry any papers, any ID with them. But on the other hand, you know, I'm sure that Romney and the Republicans would love to see pictures of Sheriff Arpaio's coming in on a horse and ridding the country of interlopers.
Right, and I think that's it's going to be a tremendous burden on the media and how they present that. I think you're very right that this can become a wedge issue no different than, you know, homophobia or a wedge issue like abortion. But on the other hand, I think the polls suggest that the majority of Americans support the DREAM Act and DREAMers. The fact that young Americans who have been here since they were brought as young children and have grown up here have a right to become American citizens and contribute in some way. I think nationally, the polls show that people don't believe in this kind of punitive approach. You know, they immediately did it, copycat in Georgia. They did a copycat in Alabama. And suddenly they lost all their workers. And so you have these huge corporate farms, Ian, who you would think that would have been on the side of the conservative government, who are saying, hey, wait a minute, we have just lost all of our pickers of sweet potatoes and onions and garlic. The fields, you know, were completely collapsing. And that sort of reality of the contributions of immigrants, whether they are documented or not, I think is beginning to be reflected. At the same time, I think the media is going to play an incredible role, just like it did in the 1960s. If they show mothers being yanked out of factories, yanked out of hotels, leaving behind children. We have over 5,000 children in foster care alone whose parents are incarcerated now just because they're undocumented. You know, do Americans tolerate that? Do Americans feel like that's just? Is that part of the American dream? I don't think so. I think that's going to backfire in any kind of extremist Republican agenda, because I think ultimately people realize, you know, immigrants benefit, that America is best seen through the eyes of immigration. That's why they've come to our country. And I think the facts also bear out. You know, I moved to Arizona, for example, in 1970 when the coal fields collapsed where my family was from. 40 years later, the immigration rates and the crime rates are lower than they were in the 1970s. And this is something that has been completely lost in all this political banter, that in fact, in the immigrant neighborhoods, we have the lowest crime rates, that in fact, the immigration, we don't have this kind of invasion that we've been talking about. And I think once we get the facts on the table, we get the human stories on the table, we get the history on the table, I think for the most part, the majority of the Americans are going to see that they're going to reject this extremism just as they are right now in Arizona.
Well, just in the last minute, though, Jeff, it would seem that the relationship between the immigrant communities and the police are absolutely would break down if they haven't already broken down. And a lot of more intelligent police than Arpaio were saying this is a terrible law because we need the trust of the community and people won't come to us. We can't police a neighborhood. So you're going to have more distrust between the community and the police, and you're also going to have more of these hideous raids of where children are separated from their parents who are dragged off and suddenly they're in foster care. I mean, that's going to happen more often, isn't it, in the next, you know, starting today, right?
Yeah, and I think that's we're waiting to see what really happens. I think you're right. There is a real emergence of what we call barrio defense committees that are watchdogs now for any sort of law enforcement agencies. And think of the insanity of that. Instead of seeing law enforcement agencies as your friends who are going to be helping you, as you say, now they're no longer going to be cooperating. The real criminals now will be free to roam because nobody will be there to work with the police to go after people who, in fact, need to be policed. I think it's going to create, you know, the Center for American Progress did an amazing report about a year ago, and they called it a state of confusion. You know, we're talking beyond Maricopa County that has, you know, already documented thousands of cases of racial profiling. We're talking about the rest of the state, small town local cops, city cops, county cops, state troopers, federal cops. You know, just think of how many versions of this law are going to take place, truly. You know, they're going to see someone, and they're going to say, I've stopped this person. Do I have the right to ask him if he's reasonably suspicious, and what really does that mean? And let's just finish with what does that mean. Sheriff Joe Arpaio went on to Glenn Beck a couple of years. And Glenn Beck, of course, no friend of this issue, asked him. He said, Joe, what does it mean if someone's regionally suspicious? And Joe responded, Sheriff Joe said, some people, and I'm reading this from the transcripts, some people who have an erratic or scared or whatever, if they have their speech or whatever they look like, if they come from another country, we'll take care of that situation. And Glenn Beck, you know, as right-wing as you're going to get, actually mocked Sheriff Arpaio and said, Sheriff, this sounds like racial profiling. And if Glenn Beck can see the racial profiling, then you'd think that the courts and the systems and the public themselves are going to see it within a very short time.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Jeff Biggers.
Thanks for having me, and always a pleasure. Take care.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Jeff Biggers, who's the American Book Award-winning author of several books on history and memoir, including The United States of Appalachia, In the Sierra Madre, and Reckoning at Eagle Creek, which received the Sierra Club's David Brower Award for Environmental Reporting. Raised in Tucson, Arizona, his latest book just out is The State Out of the Union, Arizona and the Final Showdown Over the American Dream. He writes regularly for Salon.com and the Huffington Post and performs monologues based on his work at theaters and festivals. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the author of The End of Men and the Rise of Women.
Time to send someone away. Got my back covered. Said, how you been all led astray? Come, let's count its absurd. They lead you to the race where no one's asked them.